Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. My name is Magla Pillay and I'd like to introduce to you today Sister Denise, who is in the studio with me. Sister Denise is with the Brahma Kumaris as a teacher and practitioner of Raja Yoga meditation for the past 40 years. She carries with her a wealth of wisdom and experience which she will share with you today. The format that this talk is going to take is one of Socratic dialogue, and by that we mean the process of putting questions to another in order to elicit truth, in order to elicit answers that one would not ordinarily think of in one's course of one's day. The purpose of this program is to look at what Sister Denise calls conventional morality, to debunk myths that people have about morals, ethics, values, etc., to look at your own conscience and to introspect to see if your current value system is one that works for you. The topic that we will be looking at today is building your personal ethical policy. Building your personal ethical policy. Sister Denise, thank you so much for joining us today and a very, very warm welcome to today's show.
Thank you.
So this is a very interesting topic and not something that will ordinarily make a dinner time conversation. Why is the subject of interest to you, and how is it related to your own spiritual journey?
Well, when you want to be completely, as far as possible, at one with yourself, lined up with yourself, right with yourself, then you have to sit and decide, okay, how am I going to conduct myself? What is going to be my policy for myself? I think that to be right with myself, I have to take a good look at how I'm going to proceed, you know, with my family, with my colleagues in my workplace, with the wider community. Some people have a very small world, very few people in their world. Other people have large numbers of people in their world. In my world, I have a very large number of people. I was sending out some greetings to my friends, and it came out to about 500, just prints. And that's a lot, really. I do put a lot of things out on the social media, and I have a blog, and we do videos, and so on and so forth. So there are a lot of people who know me through those instruments. There's a lot of people that I meet through lectures and seminars and so on. And probably more people know me than I know them, because, you know, if I'm with, say, 1,000 people for an hour, I will not build a personal relationship with them individually, but yet there is a relationship. So I heard a very important thing when I started my spiritual practice. And that is that whatever you do, others will watch you and they will do likewise. So that was a very important foundation of my personal ethical policy, which is that, you know, everything I do, you're on stage. I mean, here we're very conscious of the fact that there are cameras on us. But in life, you don't realize how many closed-circuit cameras are watching you. And before the era of closed-circuit television, people thought, well, nobody's watching me, it doesn't matter what I do, and so on. There's no record of what I do. And so you don't think about the impact that you have on who may be watching. But in spiritual practice, we're very, very conscious that someone's going to say, well, you do this, so that makes it okay for me to do that too. So the thing is that you become responsible for how another person is taking their cue from you. So I find it very important to be very attentive in relationships. I'm a very solitary person, but yet I come into contact with many people. And part of being solitary is I'm very, very aware of everything that's happening in my inner world. And then when I come into relationship with people, the thinking that I have in my inner world will inform and drive the way that I interact with other people in the external world, in terms of, you know, how they experience me, what is, you know, what do I bring, what do I take, is the give and take of our relationship, is it equitable, is it mutually beneficial. These are the considerations that I have, you know. And I think that people, more than anything else, they desire to be loved, to be recognized, to be seen, to be appreciated. And so it's a very important part of my personal ethical policy to bring those elements into the interaction. And I think it's very important to be straight with people. So I'm pretty direct, and maybe some people find that a little bit rough or gruff, but I'm not very keen on innuendos, double entendre, or all of this sort of thing, because it seems to sort of take away valuable time from something more important. Do you see what I'm saying? Then every so often in life, some ethical dilemmas arise where you have to choose, is this right? Is this more right? If I do this, what will happen? If I don't do this, what will happen? If I do it that way, if I do it that way? So you have to spend time figuring out what is the very best way to handle this or that situation with a view to a desirable outcome. And so I think about these things, and gradually they form patterns which then become recognizable rules for the self in different situations.
What is your relationship with your own conscience?
Well, the most important thing for me is to be right with myself.
Say more. How do you do this?
Well, I'm very sensitive to the voice of conscience. You know, there are times when some external person, authority figure, has a view about what's right and what's proper, which doesn't correspond to my view. So I will check my view, check their view, analyze them and see, is their view better, is my view better? And I may adjust my view if I find that their view is better. And if I find that my view is better, I will leave aside their view. But I'm always, you know, open to learn, open to change. But I check. I have criteria, internal criteria, by which I check. And sometimes even I can change those criteria if I learn something which requires me to adjust that.
So, Sister Denise, would you say that the person is, that you become, is it by design? Did you use external help in order to rebuild your conscience, your your internal model compass? Did you create it yourself? To what extent did you take help from the outside? Where is help available?
Well, I don't really look at it as help. I look at it as study, information.
Which you got from where?
You get it from all sorts of places. Every person that you encounter is a source of information. Books that you read are encounters with a person through what they write. My study of spiritual knowledge is a very big part of my personal relationship with God. My interaction with people who are mentors because of being spiritual great ones. I'm always looking for who is interesting, who is wise, who has figured out something. Even I would say my relationship with pain is very informative, you see, because pain is a great teacher.
Okay, tell us more about that.
What does that mean? Well, sooner or later, everyone has to encounter pain. It can be emotional pain, psychic pain, spiritual pain, philosophical pain, physical pain, financial pain, social pain, whatever. But it comes at you and it hurts and you have to deal with it. And you have to see, well, what is the message that it's telling you? Because pain is definitely a messenger. It may be telling you that the way you're running your life is not okay, better change it quick, otherwise something's going to happen to you. It may be to say, you know, there's something very, very deep going on, now it's time for you to dig deep and look at that. It may be that the circumstances around you are especially there to make you really strong and resilient, so you need to deal with them in such a way that you actually become what they're there to provide you with. So you need to interpret the things well as well.
Mm. How has your relationship with God impacted on what you just said?
Well, my relationship with God is very much to do with having access to the mind of God, the things that God knows, the way that God articulates what is known, and the way that I can get a sense of aligning my mind with God's mind so that I can feel things intuitively also. And it has a huge impact because there's a real change of vibration, and this change of vibration means a change of sensitivity in the conscience and in the intellect to what is right and wrong, what is better, what is more harmonious, and then you refine yourself along those lines.
Mm. Flowing on from that, how do you bring God into your day-to-day life? How does he help you to create your own inner ethical policy?
I think it's more like including God as a presence. You know, there is this idea that, well, God is always with me, so there is that mental companionship.
Does that mean that you can feel him right now?
Yeah. Okay. Can you not?
Audience, Sister Denise is saying that she can feel God right now. I hope you can too. Go on.
It's a subtlety. It's a subtle sensitivity. But the idea of a spiritual life is to live with that presence and to be aware of that. So there you feel guidance, you feel the resonance, you feel the companionship, and you move along. If that moves away from you, or you get cut off from that, that's a signal that, hey, you're going in the wrong direction. Come back and get your alignment right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is a work in progress, is it not?
Mm.
It's taken you a lifetime to build yourself up to where you are right now. What is left on your journey?
When you cross a glass ceiling, you can see through what has now become the floor, but you can't see the other side of the next glass ceiling. It seems to be like that, that every so often you pass through glass ceilings. So I think that there is plenty to go, which is unknown. But when the right time comes, then circumstances sort of oblige you to pass through to the next level. Mm. And I think it continues as long as life is there.
How would you say you relate differently to your own physical body than somebody who's not as spiritually enlightened as you are? How do you relate to people, to matter, being your body, but other forms of matter? How do you relate to life in general, being spiritually aware? How do you do that?
Well, I think in many ways it's not that different, but bearing in mind the criteria of the spiritual paradigm, that makes a difference. You know, in many ways I'm so used to my way of being myself, and I'm so aware that everyone is really different. I mean, there's a lot of spiritual people that I'm surrounded by who are also my friends within the Brahma Kumaris, but, you know, each one meditates in their own way, each one interprets the spiritual knowledge in their own way, and then I also have a lot of friends who are highly spiritual who are not in Brahma Kumaris, and they are within their own faith tradition and culture, but there is a resonance, you see, which is why we are friends. And we have a common goal, really, which is to arrive at that state of at-one-ment with God.
So would you say that that is your final destination? Are you going somewhere? Are you going somewhere by building your ethical policy? You spoke of the glass ceiling. You're northbound. Okay. where are you going to stop? What is the end for you?
Oh,
if somebody's studying towards a degree, they'll stop at a PhD or perhaps get another PhD. Okay, but you're studying for 40 years. Now, when are you going to stop? Until you're going to continue this until you die?
Oh, yes.
Okay, and what will be the zenith of success for you? What will be the end?
Well, there's a very beautiful phrase that came from our studies very recently, and that is to have all of your relationships fulfilled by one is your destination. So that means that you're able to sustain yourself totally from your relationship with God, and then when you have to leave this body, you leave and you just go into the light, and that's it.
Mm.
You just kind of disappear into a little point.
Yes. How does the law of karma impact on your spiritual journey, or the other way around, actually? Because everyone is carrying debts, invisible debts. What do you do? What have you done with your debts? Do you still have debts?
For me, the spiritual path is a process of finishing off karmic accounts, and you finish it off in many different ways. So I feel that a lot of my process has been to become completely free. This is a very high aim for me, a very important aim, is I like freedom. And freedom from debt, freedom from bondage, freedom from limitations, freedom, freedom, freedom. And I feel that I am very free. I'm a lot freer than most other people that I know. And that feels good. I think that the karma that I do, that I've learned to become more and more free and to invest in my long-term future as a being, to be useful to the world, to be useful to God, is really the goal.
Hmm. And what is your definition of success, Sister Denise? How would you define a successful life in terms of your own ethical policies? Are you always happy? Do you experience sorrow?
I don't really look at it in terms of a sort of like a flat line.
Which means a death.
Oh, right.
I should have hoped not. Yes.
You know, I think there's a melody to one's life of all sorts of feelings, and I don't subscribe to the idea of a specific thing that you have only that and nothing else. That doesn't feel right to me. I feel myself to be fundamentally an artistic being, so the melody, the color, the flow of life has to be beautiful, and all the different elements of beauty include the contrast. So I like to go to the different states of being, and I embrace all of them. If I have to go into my pain, I go into it deeply to see what is its message to me. If I go into my serenity, I go into there in that acceptance. If I go into darkness, if I go into light, if I go into stillness, if I go into so many different things. And I feel that life has so many things in it, and to me, my life is integrated. It has the elements that I want it to have, and if there are more to come, then great, you know.
Mm. What would you say would be the three most important lessons that you've learnt in building your own ethical policy?
First lesson is nobody can kill me. Second lesson is nobody can corrupt me. And the third lesson is nobody can break my spirit.
Okay, that was all. Those felt like bombs, so I'm going to ask you to say that again, but as you repeat it, could you please explain it? Because each one of those statements is quite loaded. Okay, number one?
Nobody can kill me.
Because you're an eternal soul.
Not only intellectually, but you know, you pass through many tests where people try to take you out, character assassination, whatever, because, you know, spirituality means coming into your power, and the obstacle to coming into your power is the threat of being taken out. But once you know, nobody can kill me, that threat is an empty threat.
Okay.
Nobody can corrupt me.
Nobody can corrupt you.
I will not sell my soul. I've tested it. You know, you cannot trap me. I will be able to see it. I will not get trapped. I will not get bought. I will not get enslaved. I will not come under an influence. You know, nobody can corrupt me. I'm clean. Mm-hmm. And that's good enough for me. And nobody can break my spirit. You know, these are tests that you have to take along the way. And if you can be broken, mm-hmm. collateral damage, okay. Mm-hmm. But if you find your power and you're in your power, you don't need to have power over anybody else. You just are in your power. That's good enough. And that's a good way to live. So right. These are the lessons I have learned.
Mm. Okay, I think we've come to the end of today's show, which has been exceptionally enlightening, mainly because you spoke about yourself. Thank you for that. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. This is the life of a yogi who's been practicing Raj Yoga meditation for the past 40 years. If some of the things that Sister Denise shared shocked you, not to worry, you are not alone. It is a very humbling experience to be in the presence of such depth and wisdom, but Here's the thing, I think every one of us can take a leaf from the book of the life of Sister Denise. One page belongs to you. That's why you are sitting and listening to today's talk. And I hope that you found today's talk enriching. I hope that somehow one, at least one line of what you heard today is of some benefit to you in the course of your own journey. And to that end, I wish you Godspeed. And I hope that you can take something that you've learned here today, put it into your life, and become a better person. And Sister Denise, thank you so much for what you have shared. Thank you, and goodbye.